200 years since they invaded Aboriginal land.
The land belongs to us. We belong to the land.
They don't do these things. They talk about it, but they never do it.
Government is trying to take away from us.
Let's Talk. AAA's flagship program that continues to elevate the diverse voices of First Nations people across the country. Centered around the unceded sovereignty of First Nations people in this country, honouring the history with a solutions-based focus on the future. With your host, Pomeroy journalist, Danny Tierce Johnson.
Yama, hello and good morning. I'm Danny Tierce Johnson, Pomeroy journalist. Welcome to Let's Talk. I'd like to start the show by acknowledging country. I acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands that we broadcast from, and I'd like to pay my respects to their elders past and present. And I extend that acknowledgement all across this nation today, particularly up to the Mithika people, where my guests come from today. Back in 2017, Indigenous elder George Gorringe led a small research expedition in Channel Country of southwest Queensland. The expedition on the traditional lands of the Mithika people visited several sites, including sandstone quarries, stone arrangements and gunyahs, dwellings made from excavated structures covered with branches. It's a real look at and a test of Dark Emu, the book, and Aboriginal structures and, agriculture before colonisation. On the line I have Shawnee and Josh Gorringe. Welcome to the show, you two.
Hello.
I'll just get you to introduce yourselves. First, your mob and your country, and I'll just start with you, Shawnee, and then Josh.
Yep. I'm Shawnee Gorringe. I'm a Mithika person, so from far southwestern Queensland in the desert there. I'm employed by Mithika Aboriginal Corporation, and I'm also studying archaeology.
Beautiful. And you, Josh?
Josh Gorringe, General Manager of Mithika Aboriginal Corporation. Been with the... Well, always been Mithika, but been with the corporation since it was first set up in 2015 as a director to start with, and then took on a general manager's role in 2020.
Yeah, well, lucky for the mob up there you did, brother. I've been wanting to talk to you, and I've been chatting with Shawnee for a couple of weeks now, but I'm extremely interested in Aboriginal archaeology and anthropology ever since Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, really, back in the day. But I've always sort of been interested in this sort of field. And I was wondering if you guys, I saw this article in The Guardian Australia a few weeks ago around the research and the expedition and the digs that's been happening up on Mithika country. I was wondering if you two could take me right back. We'll just follow the bouncing ball for the next half an hour or so. But I wonder if you could take me right back to the start of this and just contextualise the story for our audience and how this all came to be. And I think it was back in 2015 or something like that it all started?
Yeah, that's correct. We got determination October 2015. After we got determination, we sort of set up the board, as many groups have to set up the corporation and that. And then we were approached by a researcher, Michael Westaway. He was, at that stage, he was at Griffith University. Now he's moved across to UQ. He approached us back in, he would have approached us back in 2009, back when we're in the applicant stage.
Yeah, right. So this has been quite a process, hasn't it?
Yeah. So he sort of approached us then, and once we got the corporation set up, he remade contact, and we got sort of started on a bit of research. On the landscape. He'd been out here previously with the Queensland government doing stuff, and then this was sort of just a flow on from that. And, from there we've linked up with UQ, Griffith University, Flinders, Sydney Uni, and we sort of started a pretty big research project on the landscape and how a lot of our cultural sites were formed and ages of them and stuff like that. So... yeah, it's been a long process, but it's been a very interesting process at the same time.
Yeah, just for our audience, can you give us an idea of where you are and where Mithika country is? When I was doing my research, I was like, oh, these mob are way out back Queensland there, because I come from northwest New South Wales, and that's pretty out back, but you fellas are right out. And if you could just sort of describe the area and the country and where yous are.
Basically, we'd be in what's classed as the Channel Country, in far southwestern Queensland, on the sort of eastern border of Mithika country. We've got the township of Windora, and then we've got Batuta Pub, obviously, with the Batuta Advocate and all that. It's the Batuta of the life.
Shout out to Clancy.
It's in the middle of Mithika country, Batuta Hotel. Then to the west, we've got Birdsville and Baduri, but they're outside our country. They're in other groups' area. The only real township we've got in our determined area is Batuta. So,
And very, very remote out there. Very sparse country.
Sort of 3 hours south of Longreach, 3.5 hours south of Longreach sort of is us.
Shawnee, can you, I guess for the audience that might not be aware of what's up there and what we're looking at, can you sort of just give a sort of a brief explanation of what the scientists and the local mob are looking at and studying up there?
We've had a few different projects. So I came on board in 2018, I think was my first trip out there, and they were doing a PhD project at the time to try and explore and see if these stone, not arrangements, but these stone clusters, I guess, were quarries or remnants of homes like gunyahs, but kind of a bit of a different structure. So that's where it kind of all started, I guess. And then now we've moved on to looking at the flora, the fauna. We've done a couple of excavations inside caves, looking at some skeletal remains of, we found a Gould's mouse, which is supposed to be extinct on the mainland.
Wow.
So, and we're moving more in towards exploring the stone arrangements that are around, so the Scorpius arrangement that was mentioned in that article, and as well as some others.
Yeah, it's really fascinating when you look at the pictures and you look at the arrangements and you wonder what it might or could have been. How does that feel for you, Mob? Like, this is your country, this is your people. It just must be fascinating studying this and sort of learning your own culture and what these, you know, stone shapes could have been.
Yeah, it really is. Like, obviously the area is largely untouched, but our people were decimated.
Mm-hmm.
So we did lose a lot of, we don't have any knowledge keepers any longer, unfortunately. So we did lose a lot of that, knowledge that would be passed down through the generations. So it's kind of a, we're using science to, I guess, back up what we already know.
Yeah, and this is so, one thing that really interests me is just going through the articles, Dr. Michael Westaway is testing the theory of dark emu. How does that feel for you fellows up there?
We're pretty excited about it. Dark emu, something interesting about it, and Josh can probably talk more to it as well, it's opened it up for discussion. You know, everybody is questioning, civilization and whether we were just these roaming people who had no idea where, you know, like where or what was going on.
Oh, we're just wandering around the desert in circles, just, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Just,
we had no idea.
Fun. Yeah, exactly. So it's really testing that. And, we had an industry. We, like those quarries, they're massive. They span for kilometres in some places. So we obviously had a trade system and a whole industry of a large scale. For considering it was done mostly with, you know, hands and somewhat basic tools.
Yeah, and I mean, just for people out there, just Dark Emu is a book by Bruce Pascoe. It's a groundbreaking book around Aboriginal agriculture and basically saying that we weren't just hunter and gatherers, that we had a whole system, a whole life, and we did. We weren't just walking around a Mithika country in circles wondering what's going on. Josh, what about for you, brother? The whole thing around Dark Emu and then being on your country up there and, I'd love to visit one day, by the way. But, it must be, really interesting that this is getting tested on your country up there.
A big thing for us, and it was Michael and I have discussed it a lot over the sort of last few years since Dark Emu come out. And in my personal opinion, he threw it out to academics and universities and people that want to study Indigenous stuff.
Yep.
To prove him right or wrong. I don't think he meant in the book that this is what it was and this is how it'll always be kind of thing. I think he was challenging people to prove him right or wrong.
Yeah, it was a theory, wasn't it?
Large, Yeah. We've got large areas out here where you can see, like Shawnee said, the grindstone quarries and stuff. They're stretched over 9 square K. It's the biggest one in the southern hemisphere that we currently know about. So I think it's a good time to sort of start studying Indigenous history and the way Indigenous people lived, I suppose. The biggest thing for us is we've known that we've been around. You don't get taught a lot of this stuff in school.
No.
So we want a lot of this stuff to become a bit more mainstream school. I know when I was at school, we learnt that Indigenous people just wandered around the flats and survived just to survive. whereas we know that we had a purpose in life. We were we were traders. We talked to other mobs and stuff like that. So I think it's good that he brought out these theories and scenarios that challenge the way of what we've learned in the past about Indigenous history.
Yeah, and it must be really interesting for your young people up there, because this is happening in front of their eyes and the stories are coming out and what's being studied and realised. It'd be great to put all this information into the curriculum, wouldn't it? You know, we see digs like this. You know, I've been involved in other digs as well, but it'd be great to put these stories in the curriculum and these studies and show, I guess, the ancientness of our people.
Sorry, Shawnee.
I was just going to say, on that note, we actually opened an exhibition recently called Kirindari, Heart of the Channel Country, in partnership with UQ, their anthropology museum. And part of that, the exhibition itself will tour around Queensland, and part of that will be an education kit. And it will be on our country, obviously, and the research and what we found. However, we've opened it up to, say, when it lands in Townsville, for the Townsville people, for the Bindal and Woolgaroo people to add their own information into it as well. So it's kind of a knowledge exchange, I guess, but also we don't want to push it on to other people that this is the way Aboriginal people were,
yep,
when in reality we're all incredibly different.
Yeah, that's right. We are very diverse in languages, yep, and, you know, all sorts of different things, and it's one thing I love about a mob, just how diverse we are. Just on that, anthropology and archaeology have always been a very white-led field, particularly when it comes to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander studies. Shawnee, you're studying to become an archaeologist yourself, which I think is amazing, and I think we need an army of black anthros and archaeologists out there. What is it for you that's drawn you to this certain field?
Following that dig in 2018, I was the kid that was into the dinosaurs and the matchbox cars, and I was, you know, happy that I was out on the sandhills and always interested in what's around me and, you know, why is this doing this? So it was kind of natural.
Yep.
But I went about life, did, you know, this and that, had a family and whatnot, and then following that dig in 2018, I kind of sort of thought, well, this is it, really. This is what I want to do. I want to learn about my culture. I want to help others learn. I just want to know more, and I want to help. You know, the Mythic Aboriginal Corporation motto is care for country, mm-hmm, care for culture, care for our people, and that's what this is all about. And I think by nature, Aboriginal people really want to protect and conserve land and their people. So it was kind of a natural sort of thing.
Yeah, I think because it's that we haven't had any black fellows in archaeology and anthropology, that's why the information is so skewed and misinformed,
yeah,
when it comes to our knowledges and our cultures and our, yeah, customs. And I just think the more black fellows we have in there, you know, Aboriginal,
yeah, exactly,
Torres Strait Islander, the information will become correct and we'll have proper,
yeah,
protection,
exactly,
of our sites and things like that. Is that right for you?
Yes. And I think that's what PASCO was sort of trying to offer, was read between the lines, think outside of the box. It's not exactly what they said. Like in his book, I listened to it in 2018, I think it was, or might have been 2019, in the car, and what really stuck with me was he was describing this event in a dam and how, you know, the white retellings of it were that, you know, these people were savages and whatnot, when realistically they were actually, you know, cornered into this dam and it was men and child, basically. So there was a whole other narrative. So it's questioning that narrative, really.
Yeah, we know there's a whole false narrative out there that's a, you know, that's just gammon.
Yeah, it's really always the exactly. And it's also always the conqueror, you know, who tells that story. So it's time for us to be able to take control, tell our own story in a way that makes sense to us.
Yeah, because I've been involved with digs. I was up at the Mulla Kananya dig up in Kakadu, and that's where we found a stone head that changed the date from 60,000 to 85,000 years of age. And I was the one that found it. I was in the quarry. But I was the only black fella in the dig because the local mob up there, they didn't want to be involved because they were worried about what was in the ground, and they gave me blessing and smoked me every day and whatnot. So I was down there. But it was just such an interesting process, but it was also a very white process. And that sort of put me off a bit. But I didn't really want to be there, but I had to be there as a black fella and I had to represent the mob. You know, you guys are really different in that I find that you guys are leading this. And obviously Michael Westaway is really different from UQ, but you're just sort of leading the way, and that's quite different.
Probably that when we originally agreed that we'd start doing research, we set up a research framework.
Yep.
How researchers are going to work with us and how we're going to work with researchers. And it was a partnership in every sense of the word. We said we got all IP, copyright, all that kind of stuff. We get to approve or not approve research papers that come out and stuff like that. So to us, we've got the power in the sense that what goes out in the public eye, we've given our blessing to people, to the researchers, to put it out there. Obviously, there's sites and stuff that, just don't make the cut, that we don't want people to know about.
Really, and that's really important, brother.
So I think we set it up really well from the beginning. Obviously, it's an evolving thing along the way. As we've got more research, we've gotten more knowledge on what we got to better protect and what we can let out in the public a bit more. And probably back to the archaeology and anthropology side of things, who better to tell a story about our mob but our mob?
Exactly.
We're not going to dress it up, make it out to be something that it's not, so... I think the more and more Indigenous people we can get into these kind of roles, I think it'll be a lot better, or the stories will get out a lot more and they'll be a lot more informed and a lot more from our side of the story, I suppose.
Yeah, and it's really important that we control the narrative, because we know that our narrative has been told for us by, you know, non-Indigenous people for so long now. And it's really good for our audience and other communities out there to hear that, you know, if you get approached by a university or an archaeologist, you know, wanting to look at stuff on your country, that you get to set the terms of reference, you get to set the framework, you get to set the rules, eh, brother?
Exactly.
You know, that's really important because, and like you said, there's sites that we don't want to tell people about, and it's really important to protect those sites too, isn't it?
Yeah. And that's the biggest thing with us is, yes, there is a lot of sites that we're happy to put in the public eye, but there's a lot of sites that we've said, this is too sacred, let's just leave it alone. By all means, we can conduct a bit of research for our side of things, for our knowledge, but as far as it goes out in the public eye, we've kept it pretty quiet within ourselves.
Can I ask you, how does it feel like when they find beautiful artefacts on your country and you're there? Because I'm just looking at some of the pictures of the wooden artefacts. We've got some bummies there, some whatnot. It must feel amazing that it's so ancient, you know, and that's your people that made that stuff, and, you know, that's the connection today that you've still got. It's just amazing.
It's a lot of that, the wooden objects and stuff, they were donated by the Duncan Kemp family, by other people that had found them previously to us going out.
Oh, wow.
We haven't found a lot of wooden objects when we've been out on country.
Because they'd probably deteriorate, right?
Well, they do. It's a harsh environment out here.
Yeah, that's good.
yeah, it's pretty harsh. Like, a lot of the preserved stuff is stuff that people have found back in the early days, the early 1900s and stuff like that, that they've preserved themselves, which is great that they had the foresight to preserve such great artifacts and keep those on keep them in a good way. So we found a lot of stone tools, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
Stone.
But even that, right, I was just, when I found that bit of stone up at Malacananya, bros, when I touched it, I just started crying. Like, I just realised that, hey, this was made by our ancestors, 80,000 years ago, and here I am in 2000, and I think it was 15 or 16 back then, and I'm touching it some 80,000 years later. Like, that just, it just overwhelmed me. Is there a sense of overwhelmingness sometimes because of the culture and our story?
Sometimes when you're out there, like, it's gotten to the stage where we've just got that much that's that well preserved out on country that we're getting used to seeing a lot of this stuff. Like, we knew there was places out there with all this kind of stuff in it, but on the vastness that it is and the enormity of how many places you can go to and find bits of stone flaking beds and stuff like that, it just amazes me that there's that much of our country that's got this stuff across it. Like, nearly everywhere you find Silkcrete, there's someone has had a go at making a tool out of it.
Yeah.
Always. Yeah. Everyone, just unbelievable that there's that much of it.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, what we don't think about too is something I learned when I've been on other digs is that the terrain way back when was so different. There could have been rivers flowing through there. There could have been lakes. There could have been this and that. And the terrain and the country has obviously changed so much over time. Is that something that's been looked at in the study, Shawnee?
It's starting to be looked at. We're going to some of the lakes, I think, in this trip coming next month to have a look, do some coring and see sort of where and what was going on pre-colonisation, pre-contact.
Yeah, because, I mean, back then, like you said, there was big inland lakes. Like, when you fly over that country, you see big salt pans, which used to be big old salt lakes, I guess. So, yeah, it's really the shifting country and what it looks like today to back then. I think it's really fascinating.
Yeah, it is. It is. They found, you know, along the outskirts of some of those lakes, remnants of, you know, civilization of some sort, like old gunyahs and things like that. So, yeah, they were definitely living around there.
And Shawnee, what's the scientific process? And if you could explain to our audience, when you're studying our artifacts, and I guess the scientific process that they go through, what's that like? Can you sort of explain some of the basic steps of what you do?
I can't really explain it too much. I'm kind of separated from what they do down in UQ. So I'm up in Townsville. Yep. I study in Townsville. Yeah. And I've been trying to tie up my Indigenous studies sides of things. I will be finally, post-COVID, stepping into the laboratory next semester to do some paleontology work.
And what's that like doing that sort of, if there's young people out there, I just sort of want to, you know, if their ears prick up a little bit with archaeology and paleontology and these ology words, can you just tell us a bit about your studies and what you do? Because I think there's a lot of young blackfellas out there that are interested in this field and might not know of somebody, and it'd be good to hear this story.
Yeah, I think the most important thing is to not be afraid to give it a go. So I started out doing a diploma and I was doing like a social sciences diploma just to test the waters of university. I'm first in family, so nobody around me had been to university at the time. And basically it's just like any other degree, really, you know. I'm doing archaeology, Indigenous studies and paleontology. Basically the amount of content that I've learnt is just insane. Unfortunately, I started in 2019, so COVID kind of kept me away from the labs. But when you do go into the labs and you do get to see what they have, you know, the things that you don't get to see in, like, in the museums, there's always so much more in the background, like, you know, the different, it's just seeing the difference in people's artifacts and what they have to offer is probably what blows me away the most.
And how do you both feel about our artifacts being in museums? Sometimes it can be very controversial. Sometimes they're there for good reasons for protection. Sometimes they've been removed. How do you feel about that sort of story?
For me, it's a very complex feeling, I think, and I think a lot of people feel like that. You're grateful that they were preserved because, like Josh mentioned, our country is very harsh and, you know, we don't even really have rock art paintings. We have etchings, so we don't have a lot kind of, you know, but it's a complex feeling. You really appreciate that they've kept it for you, but it's also, like you mentioned, it's the other, you know, you're treated as the subject and it often gets lost as to who even owns the artifact.
Yeah. Up north of you with a Gungalita mob, it's up Yana's country up there, Gungalita country. We went over to England a couple of years ago and did a repatriation. And it was around the time that Black Panther was released, and there was all that conversation around stolen artifacts in the British Museum. And so we had a couple of mob there, or Gungalita fellows, were staying in a motel directly opposite the British Museum. And it was a weird feeling because we went down to this like fifth floor basement where all the stolen artifacts were, and we're actually doing a repatriation of a lot of their stuff that was stolen from back in the day. And most of our artifacts around the world aren't even on display. They are sitting in the fifth floor basement, packed away in boxes. We find it so hard to get it all back. But that was a double-edged sword for us too, because we're like, oh, you know, this shouldn't be here, but they were preserved. Like these artifacts that were hundreds and hundreds of years old were perfectly, you know, protected. They were as they were. And the mob got to take them back onto country and use them to dance and in ceremony again. I mean, it was pretty cool, but like they shouldn't be taken in the first place, you know. So it's quite a conundrum for us.
Yes, yeah, I agree. Even when we were trying to sort through content for the exhibition and trying to see what artifacts were around in the different museums, even in Australia, it was, you know, a whole process of verifying who you are, making sure that they know your identity so that you can get access to what is essentially yours. It is a really odd feeling, and like you said, it is a double-edged sword.
Yeah. What about for you, Josh?
I'm pretty much the same, but like Shawnee said, it's great that things were preserved and they're kept. But by the same token, I think as more and more mobs get their cultural centres back, their keeping places sort of set up, I think a lot of these artefacts should be returned to mob for us to preserve them. And if we put them in a fifth-storey basement, well, it's still out on our country.
Decision, eh?
our decision. Not someone in an office in Brisbane or in England saying, oh, this is where we're going to keep them. I think our big push for the last sort of 2 years, since me and Shawnee are really sort of ramped up with a lot of stuff, is getting a keeping place in Windora to store these artefacts. Get the proper hunky-dory with the climate control and all that kind of stuff. Preserve these things ourselves.
Sorry, bro, I just started giggling. I haven't heard the term hunky-dory for years. But no, we do these hunky-dory places, cuz.
Yeah.
You know,
That's the big thing for us to get, and a part of that we want to tell the story from our mob way back when, right up till today, the good, the bad, the ugly.
Yep. The truth.
Tell the actual story. Yeah, the truth from word go to the end. And that's been a big thing that me and Shawnee been sort of pushing and trying to find funding for the last sort of 3-4 years is to have a place like that.
Yeah, and some of the... Can you sort of talk more broadly around the work that the Mithika Aboriginal Corporation is doing? Because I know you've got young people involved in protecting these sites and studying these sites, but there's also a bigger picture, isn't there?
Well, a big thing for us is education, and not only educating our people that have been moved away or for jobs and stuff have left the country. A big thing for us is education of everyone. So that cultural centre will help do that, as well as we've just recently been funded through the Queensland Government for the Rangers program. So we've now got 3 young people that have never been out on country before that are learning all about their country.
That's so good to hear, brother.
Yeah, and they're sort of all 18, 19-year-old kids that have grown up in Toowoomba or something like that, and they're back out on country now learning their stuff. so, which is great to see.
Yep.
Yeah, we can't take that for granted because right there is the continuation of the Mythica story through those young people.
Yeah. And then we set up a contract mustering business back in 2020, as well as we're calling it land management. It's sort of it's sort of a team that'll do just about anything, I suppose. Weed control, and we've been predominantly looking at youth at risk, not only from our mob, but whoever's mob wants to have a go and get out of the city, I suppose.
Yeah, and that's really important. A lot of us that do live in the cities all come from the country, you know, and come from other areas. And to get back on country and get out bush, it's just so important. Otherwise, you can get a bit womba, a bit narrowgar sitting in the city sometimes.
Well, the big thing that me and Dad have done our entire lives, like Dad and I grew up in the bush, and I worked for Dad. Dad's working now for me, which is a bit weird, but yeah.
Look out, payday, there might be a bit of trouble.
We've always trained fellas. So I suppose the added bonus we've got with the young fellas we're getting now, if we can lift up a couple of young fellas from different mobs and that, well, then that in turn, they see what we're doing and how we're doing stuff, and they then put their spin on it and go back and help their mob. So we're teaching them as much as they're earning money and going chasing cows and spraying weeds and stuff like that, they're learning about culture along the way.
Yeah.
Like if we're out mustering and we see a site or something, we pick it out and say to the boys, oh, come and have a little quick look at this and explain what the site is. So it's reconnecting not only our mob, it's reconnecting other mobs that are working for us to what our culture is, which in turn then helps them fellas when they go home to explain to their mob, look, these fellas are doing this. Well, why aren't we doing stuff like this? So it empowering them young people to grow their own mob as much as it's growing our mob.
Yeah, and it's a beautiful thing. We can't take it for granted what yous are doing. Shawnee, in terms of the expedition, the dig, what's coming up? Where do you want to see this go? And I guess, there's a long way to go, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. I think tying up a few of the loose ends on the gunyahs and whatnot, which will always, we'll never know exactly, I guess, what happened. But now that we're moving into exploring the carbon and the flora and the fauna and all of that, I'm just really excited to see what else we find out. It's just really exciting times, and it's really exciting to be able to be the leaders in this whole project.
Yeah, because it's really interesting. Once you start joining the dots, you can start, you can start putting stories together, books together, possible documentaries, films. There's a whole other world out there of education that can come out of this.
Yeah, exactly. And that's our ultimate goal, is to educate our people and, even through our youth camps and whatnot that we have, like just seeing their face when they come out onto country and see some of these sites and see what's going on is just the best feeling.
Yeah, no, it's very inspiring. It's very empowering just to talk to you guys. I'd really like to thank you for coming on the show today. And please can you keep in touch with me and just update me on any events or findings or anything going on country, because I'd love to get you back on the show and keep our mob updated to the great work that you guys are doing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Josh?
No, I was just going to say, that'd be no problem.
Yeah, no, look, it's really fascinating. It's really interesting what's going up there. I'd implore our mob and non-Indige mob listening to just Google the Mythica Aboriginal Corporation and just have a good look at their work and have a look at their country. There's photos online of the artefacts and the quarries. But don't just go driving up there, you mob. Make sure you get permission and, go through the corporation and whatnot and make sure you support them and do things the right way. But, Shawnee and Josh, I'd really like to thank you for your time and thanks for talking to us here and let's talk.
Yeah, sound good. Thank you.
Righto, my peoples. No worries. That's Shawnee and Josh Gorringe from the Mythica Aboriginal Corporation talking to me from up there on country, and Shawnee's in Townsville. A fascinating chat about our ancientness and our culture. Thanks for joining us today on AAA Murray Country.